All right, 8:08 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson on 10:30. The Voice, clearing his throat, getting ready, getting the pipes ready.
Warm them up,
rev it up, let's go.
At this hour in the morning, God bless you, Christy Simone, rolling out of bed and going on the radio.
It's our good friend, Mr. Matt Russell, Russell Public Communications. Is that the?
That is it. That's the day job, as we say.
I just like, I like when you call me from the office.
Yeah.
And it pops up on my phone that you're getting a call from Russell Public Communications.
A milestone in your day.
Pretty impressive.
It is impressive. Absolutely.
Well, talk about impressive. I mean, here I am sitting in the, what will forever to me be known as the Bustos Legroom Lounge here. I mean, this new studio is absolutely killer, but my apologies, to Ed, Alexander with this new configuration. So I no longer get to see Ed through the window. So Ed is behind me, looking at my bald spot.
Had to beg back your
right.
Head,
so, yeah, rise and shine. Enjoy the sunrise, Ed.
So what we've learned here, right? So you're at third base. You're Mike Schmidt right now.
Right on.
Okay. And so what we've learned, if you want to see Ed, you got to go first base.
Mm. Oh, right. Okay.
All right.
All right.
So my favorite third base moment was first day, first guest in the new lounge here. The Bustos Lounge was Joel Fineman.
Oh, right. Mm. Yep.
So Joel wants to have a discussion about
sanctuary cities.
Right. So as you can tell, Dr. Zen Master over there.
There he is.
Starts getting a little fired up.
Uh-huh. But Joel can't see me because he's facing the other way.
So I'm like blowing up in here. On the other side of the glass.
He looked like Biggs from A New Hope, right? Right? And he's turning like left and right because that TIE fighter's on his rear end. I can't see him!
What? Ed's yelling at me! Are you crazy, Fineman?
This is all by design. Literally.
So, that's, Joel Fineman will never sit in the third base position again is what I'm thinking.
Right.
So.
He's learned.
So we're gonna riff on food. Today.
Let's riff.
This is what we like to talk about, Matt and I. One question I do have for you. For a guy who comes from a family that's political in a way, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Your dad's Mark, of course.
Yes.
Is, where did the food, I never asked you this question, where did the food fascination come from? We know about your liquor problem, but where did the food come from?
Well, take a look at me, for God's sake. So no, I've been, you know, I was a foodie long before foodie was, you know, was the thing, right? I mean, I began experimenting with all kinds of fun stuff in the kitchen as a little kid. You know, I should say my mother is a phenomenal cook.
Okay.
And I remembered, you know, standing alongside her in the kitchen watching her do her thing, and she you know, prepared a lot of ethnic cuisine.
Were you living at the time?
So I was born in Washington D.C. at the Georgetown University Medical Center.
Look at you.
How about that? Go Hoyas. Whatever the heck a Hoya is.
Who knew there was 1 degree of separation between you and Patrick Ewing?
That's right. So I'm born in Georgetown, and at that time my family was living in a small town right outside the Beltway called Annandale, Virginia.
I
lived in Annandale, Virginia for the first 8, 9, 10 years of my life, moved to Virginia Beach for about a half a minute, and then came out to Tucson when I was 11 years old. But it was basically learning in the kitchen, standing alongside my mother and kind of watching her experiment and imagine how different flavors worked together.
Right.
So that's, you know, I was putting garlic salt on popcorn when I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old, when people look at me like I'm crazy. And now, of course, that's a thing.
Right.
So I have just, you know, especially when you think about what I do for a living, running a communications and public relations firm. I mean, the work that we do is all about storytelling. And, you know, that's the work that you do as a marketing consultant as well. It's all about finding that story. And I have learned over my time and along my journey that few things tell stories better than what is at the center of the plate or what is in the glass. So when you think about cocktails and cuisine, even craft beers, craft whiskeys, all of those really tell their own distinct stories. So when you think about, you know, why I love getting up every day is because I am blessed to have the opportunity to storytell for clients as well to storytell for those in the F&B food and beverage scene, and that's why I think it's such a magical moment.
What was your first restaurant client?
My first restaurant client. Okay, the ultimate irony is, despite the fact that I do a lot of food and beverage work on the I mean, I hate to say on the side, but, you know, my day job is a PR firm. We've done very little, in the food and beverage space. So most of our clients, you know, we've got, you know, a few here in Tucson, but most of our clients are outside of the state.
Right.
We have an office in Washington, D.C. We do a lot of federal public policy work. So we mostly do work for big companies, healthcare, medical technology companies. But let's see. We have done work for, we were the public relations agency for Fox Restaurants for probably 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
We worked, years ago with Brian Metzger when he was in the food and beverage business, going back to his first days with Jack's Kitchen up on Ina and Oracle.
Comet.
What's that?
Like a comet. Like a shooting star.
What, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then ultimately 5 restaurants. Let's see. Who else have we worked with, in the food and beverage space? Oh, we've done a lot of work with the Barrio Brewing Company.
Okay.
We have done work for Three Wells Distilling Company.
We know them well.
One of the local distillers.
So let me ask you about Fox concept. There's been a lot of people who have tried to do what he's done.
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
What would you say is the secret to the Fox success?
You know, it's interesting that you asked that question because you're absolutely right. People look at Fox as a model and they want to replicate it. They wanted, you know, how have you gone from one restaurant only 20 years ago? Now look, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a long time.
Now, did this grow out of Gilligan's?
It grew out of, well, Gilligan's.
I know I'm saying that, right?
I think we all have our favorite Gilligan's moments, but that might be for another show, maybe at after 5 o'clock.
I only went to Gilligan's when Rito Racetrack first opened up.
That's right.
And they were one of the sponsors in the thing is that if you brought your program, you got a free whatever. So my dad said, oh, let's try this dumb place called Gilligan's. And there we are.
Now, which is
great.
Now, is,
wasn't it? It was great on the river.
It was right there. I think is it where the Trader Joe's is right now?
It certainly is.
Kind of, sort of. It was an old Casa Molina, I think, before that
after that.
Or after that.
Yes.
Yep. But no, so his first kind of
that voice
formal
behind you is Ed Alexander. I just want to make sure.
Oh, I'm going to crack my neck here. He can't see me because of the bald spot, but I digress. But no, the first formal restaurant within the Fox family that started the whole company back in 1997 was Wildflower.
Yep.
And it's one of the few restaurants within the Fox spectrum of concepts where there's only one. So, you know, there's many Norths. There's many Zin Burgers.
I just ate at Wildflower 4 days ago.
It's one of my favorite restaurants. I mean, it's we're talking about romance and date night, and I'm sure they were off the charts for Valentine's Day. I think consistently Wildflower continues to be one of the best restaurants in town.
It's Ray, the operations guy. I can't believe the door's open.
Especially when that Russell guy opens his trap.
He's like, I'm on a long distance call. I can hear Russell 44 feet away.
But one of the things about Fox, to answer your question, is, you know, there's multiple concepts. Each has its own distinct feel and flavor and atmosphere. But there's one thing that Fox does well in terms of, you know, the only thing they homogenize is their hospitality. So you know you have that Fox experience no matter if you're at Olive and Ivy, whether you're at Eric and Butcher, or whether you're down here at Culinary Dropout. You have that sense of Fox family and the Fox service culture, and that weaves its way through all of their concepts. And I think, Chris, there's now 62 restaurants across the country.
So one of the things in the Fox world that, to this day, I know he's listening right now.
He is indeed.
There's a tear in Bill Number Two's eye right now. All right. And I kind of agree with him. To me, the greatest Fox restaurant that doesn't exist anymore was Bistro Zim.
Oh boy, we could do an hour on that. And I tell you what, Sam and his brother Dave are still, there is a cloud that hangs over both of them. Now, let's just be honest. Zin Burger took the space, and now there's multiple Zin Burgers, and it is a growth brand, and they're doing very, very well. But yes, Bistro Zin, when we think about my wife and I, we moved back to Tucson in the late 90s, that was our special place. But
Bill,
yeah, there are still.
Okay, Bill Number Two to this day still goes there once a year and puts a candle in front of Bistro and Zin Burger and says, bring back.
The first flight of wine I've ever had. This was before flights were a thing. And so they literally carry 3 glasses of wine over in a carrier, put them down and kind of taste through the portfolio. I'd never seen anything like that before. So setting a trend.
Let's go to the phone, 790-2040. Let's go to Carl, or as you say back in Boston, Cal, on line. Carl, what's up, buddy?
You guys talking about food again on Food Friday, and I thought I would throw in something about coffee. My wife and I went to the Big Heart Coffee Shop up on 22nd Street. They've been in business about 5 months. And for the people who are not your yuppie, dink-type, double-income, no kids, that always go to Starbucks, this place is definitely better than Starbucks. The coffee is good. The atmosphere is old and kind of worn. I don't know what kind of restaurant was in there to begin with, but the service was nice.
Okay, what's this place called again, Carl, one more time?
Big Heart Coffee.
Big Heart
on
Coffee.
22nd Street.
Okay.
It's a great tip.
So, you know, for somebody that doesn't much care for Starbucks. And the other thing is, you know, coffee again, I'm not a real coffee snob, but to be honest with you, and I've talked to quite a few people, if you want better coffee than Starbucks and just as wide a menu, there's absolutely nothing wrong with Quick Trip coffee.
Well, again, I have no problems with the Quick Trip coffee.
No. I mean, in the food media, of course, I, like you, Chris, get multiple press releases from multiple, you know, restaurant companies, you know, local and national that have local operations here. And I was invited to the Quick Trip soft opening, so where they revealed their restaurant. And I wasn't able to go, but I'm telling you what, legitimately, I heard from several people saying that the food at Quick Trip is better than they thought it was going to be, and they take their food seriously. So I think it's a good tip. I have nothing against it.
It is. You know, there's nothing wrong with their breakfast burritos that they prepare right there. Their pizza is perfectly more than adequate, nowhere near Rocco's, but for the price and for the convenience and the quickness, it's absolutely edible.
So Big Heart Coffee looks beautiful on the inside from what I can see. Believe it or not, they're at 4.6 out of 5 on their Google reviews on 171.
Wow.
I'm just happy that 171 people reviewed Big Heart Coffee on 22nd on the southeast corner of 22nd and Swan. So the only thing I ever thought of there was the Knights of Columbus Hall. So
that's right. Carl, I'm glad you brought up coffee, because as we talk about what's happening on the local culinary and cocktail scene with craft brewers, with craft distillers, even winemakers, the Arizona wine industry is absolutely booming. The local coffee roasting, you know, community is, I think, a national model. Look, we're drinking brewed coffee here. That's kind of our neighborhood,
right,
a coffee place. But when you think about, there's a community, a growing community of artisan coffee roasters that really take their job seriously. Sounds, Carl, like this is a place that has joined to that community. I'm anxious to get over there and try it. I'm not a coffee snob as well. I just want a decent cup of Joe. And so I'm excited to try that one out.
Yeah, you know, that's it. All I want is something that's got caffeine in it and not that overcooked stuff that you find in the snobby places.
At the big box stores.
Carl, thanks. The
interior of the place is a little bit shabby and worn, which is fine.
So are we.
Yeah, exactly.
What a coincidence.
It fits the customers. So, I wanted to give them a shout out because we were very, very pleased with them.
All right, Carl, thanks for the heads up. I appreciate it. Big Heart Coffee, 22nd and Swan. If you have any questions, comments, anything about food, coffee, beer, brew, you got it. This is your hour to hit us, 790-2040. You're on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. 8:25 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Give us a call. You got any restaurant recommendations or your little spot, or you want to talk about drinking or beer or wine or coffee
right
or
place, yeah.
Variety of beverages.
Jeez.
You were talking about the coffee scene in Tucson. And so it's interesting. I feel like that's the scene that hasn't grown up. I think it's the slowest of all of them in a way, right?
Right.
Everyone else is doing, everyone seems like they're making bathtub gin left and right, right? We have a craft brew every 3 feet. But when I start talking about people who are like kind of roasting their own beans and doing it right, is that a hand?
I think, yeah, exactly. It is. And I think, there's no coincidence that this is a slow roasting industry. So their whole idea has to be slow roasted. But I think the challenge in the coffee community is, what is it that you are going to do to distinguish yourself from the others with something like coffee? So when you're brewing beer, there's so many different flavor expressions. There's so many different ways to imagine flavors within beer, within whiskey, within food.
Right.
Coffee's a little bit more of a challenge, because I know, to the otherwise pedestrian palate, we know about Ecuador, we know about Colombia, we know about, you know, these kinds of regions, but how does that really manifest in a coffee that's different from the one you had the day before?
Correct.
That's what these guys have to do. And again, as a marketing professional, Chris, you'll understand this. Once you figure out how your product is distinct from the others, how is your company distinct from the others, and how is your marketing going to manifest that?
Right. Because you're right, in beer and liquor, we can add some sort of fruit,
Right.
Some sort of flavoring agent in it.
Right.
But when it comes to coffee, so when you get your, you know, your vanilla bean coffee, because it's been artificially popped with something, it's right. not that you can totally roast something that's going to taste like vanilla coffee.
Right, right. And I think in the whiskey scene, you're familiar with the Hamilton Distillers guys,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, and to see how far they've come in just a few years, that he started making single malt whiskey in the back of his furniture store. Now he's in 25 states. They're launching in Hong Kong this year. This is, of course, the Whiskey Del Bach, single malt whiskey, kind of distilled on the Scotch tradition. But he, instead of malting the barley over peat like they do in Scotland, he's malting the barley over mesquite, of course, the wood that's in abundance. So you've got that wonderful kind of soul of the Sonoran Desert in that whiskey, and that is, I think, what is behind his success, because it's a sense of place for Tucson
right.
that now people around the world are going to be able to appreciate.
And if you're someone who understands your whiskey a little bit, you can tell the difference right away.
Right away. Right. Even from the nose, even from the fragrance. That's where the story begins.
Coffee-wise, I feel like of everyone who roasts their beans, and there's a few of them out there. There's the Savaya experiment and all these different ones. I like Savaya, but in the end, I think the person, and I love my brew. Don't get me wrong. I love Phil and Kate.
Yeah.
But if someone, like the best roasted bean, if I'm going to, DeSimone has an opinion about everything, right? So to me, the best roasted bean that you can get and bring home and whatever, it's actually at Raging Sage.
Oh, that's a great tip. Yeah, that's over on Campbell.
Campbell, just north of Grant.
Grant, right?
Just north of Grant. There's that R Galaxy comic book geeks.
Right.
Just literally north of those guys.
Right.
I don't know how the R Galaxy guys stay in business either. But if you're listening, R Galaxy, God bless you people. You're
online too.
You're doing something amazing. But, they have a thing called the Presidential Blend at, I think they're still doing it at Raging Sage. I think that's, of all the things that are locally roasted, I think that's my favorite blend.
And when you think about, again, getting back to the family story and the stories behind the proprietors of these places, I like to go to the places where the owners actually have a relationship with the growers.
Right.
And that's not, fortunately, that's not unique. You're finding more and more people actually traveling around the world to walk the terroir, if you will,
right.
with the farmers to get an understanding of that kind of cycle that we can appreciate on our end. Now, getting back to what I love a really dark, deep, rich, oily, wet, shiny bean.
Correct.
These are the kinds of beans that I just absolutely love, makes my mouth water just saying it.
Right.
And I think a lot of the coffee places around town have really found those kind of respectable, sustainable purveyors that they're able to work with.
And Carl hit it for me. That Starbucks burnt taste?
Yeah. No thanks.
Come on.
No thanks. No, I just, he says, well, they're better than Starbucks. I wonder if that's their tagline.
All right, when we come back with Matt Russell, Russell Public Communications, he's got a very impressive email list that you can join.
Yeah.
Called On the Menu.
Right.
How do they join your email list?
Great, I was going to ask you if I could do a shameless plug.
Oh.
So Russell Public Communications is the day job. For anything food, beverage, wine, beer, whiskey, hospitality related, my website is onthemenulive.com. After my radio show went on hiatus back in December, onthemenulive.com really became the canvas for all of my culinary and cocktail encounters. So we link to your show on that page. We link to all of my food and beverage media appearances. Of course, I still write the biweekly food and beverage column for Inside Tucson Business. They throw it in Foothills News from time to time. Tucson Weekly picks it up from time to time. So all of my columns, all of my radio appearances, this actual segment right now will be posted to onthemenulive.com here shortly. So come on and take a look. I just started a new blog last month. In addition to the kinds of things I write for the newspaper, I write in a different style, in a different way for my blog. So check that out. It's all onthemenulive.com.
Now, blog Matt Russell.
Yeah.
How is he different than newspaper Matt Russell?
Yeah, okay, so very interesting.
You opened up that can of worms with your different styles.
I certainly did. Well, there's some things I can say in a blog that I can't say in a newspaper. No, I'll tell you, the biggest difference is when I write my column, my editor, God love him, is very unforgiving because I have a word count, because this is a print publication.
Correct.
So every other Friday in Inside Tucson Business, you can literally count my words, and if you include my bio at the end, is somewhere between 600 and 615 words.
Okay.
So I don't have that limitation when I'm blogging.
Gotcha.
Although, interestingly, I don't write I write much shorter for my blog, because with the attention span of the average reader, I want to get them while I have them and have them leave happy.
I was going to say, it's like,
much
hey,
shorter.
If you come to my blog, you can read a 1,300 word piece on
no, you don't want to do that. You know, I want to keep my visitors. Anyway, my current blog post is about international culinary superstar Andrea Nguyen. I hope I pronounced her last name right. She's been all over the news, Today Show, Good Morning America, New York Times, Washington Post.
Is this N-G-U-Y-N?
Yes, Nguyen.
So I have an eye doctor of that name for years.
So
I've been saying like that.
Nguyen.
And they said when.
When?
That's all right. What they told me. Right, but
so it's Andrea Nguyen. And I'm glad you told me, because she's actually going to be coming to Tucson for the Tucson Festival of Books, doing a live cooking demonstration and conversation that I'm going to be emceeing.
Awesome.
So when I introduce her, thank your eye doctor that I didn't butcher her last name. But she is the queen of Vietnamese cuisine. And in my blog, again, on themenulive.com, you can read my story about how my experiences as a father-to-be 24 years ago in going to childbirth classes. My wife and I made a weekly tradition to stop off at our favorite Vietnamese restaurant after doing our pushing practices, preparing for our firstborn.
Wow.
And there's a story that connects my childbirth classes with Vietnamese cuisine, and you don't want to miss it.
Broadway and Wilmot?
No, this was back in Virginia. So what I mentioned, I failed to mention about my story. Yeah, born in D.C., moved out to Tucson when I was 11, stayed here through college, got married, moved back to Washington to start my career. I was a lobbyist. You believe that? That'll be another show.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, today we like to say legislative strategist. But I was a lobbyist, guilty as charged. And I lived in Alexandria, Virginia. My son was born in Arlington. So on themenulive.com, you can read that fun story.
All right, let's go visit some great sponsors on 1030 The Voice. Local news and talk, 790-2040. All right, 8:38 in the morning. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Mr. Dave Martin.
Yeah, Dave Martin.
He just Facebook messaged me. He wants to know what Russell's favorite local restaurant is.
Is this there's a reason why this is microphone up. Okay, David Martin, brother Dave.
This is like
how can you
picking your favorite children.
Ask me that question. I mean, I could do top 20. How much time we have? And my list changes from like hour to hour. That's the one thing I love about the Tucson food scene. But I will promise you, sir, that never will you find in my top 10 or 20 or 100 any restaurant that you can also go to when you're in Detroit or Topeka or Alexandria.
Correct.
You know, this is all about the local food, business. So I there is no possible way I can possibly say what my favorite restaurant is, but I do love me a beautiful rib from Red Desert Barbecue. Now look, I actually judge the world's largest barbecue rib competition.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, 500,000 people convene in Sparks, Nevada every Labor Day weekend to consume collectively 265,000 pounds of ribs. And it's a
Yikes.
Job that I take very seriously. 12 judges adjudicate 24 rib cookers, and these are the best of the best. They're the professional circuit barbecue competitors. And I went to have my first rib at Red Desert probably 3-4 months ago because I heard him on your show, and I said, I gotta get to know this dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
I went down there. This brother knows how to do a rib, man.
He does.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't say that I have a favorite restaurant. There's too many, and this is only a 4-hour show. So, anyway, I'll be thinking about that and probably, share that information at a later time.
So let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's make this easier.
Yeah, for All right. easier said than done.
Let's talk about dishes.
Yeah.
So you don't have, so my thing is locally owned restaurant.
Yep.
One dish, right, that you can think of these places, and then you say, what of those dishes are like my top 3 to 5 right now?
Right.
Not all time, I'm not gonna do all, but currently, what are some dishes that at a restaurant that you kind of keep going back to?
Okay, so there's a restaurant on the southeast corner of the Sunrise and Kolb intersection, and it's called Commoner
Yep.
& Co. Commoner & Co. is run by the same team behind Prep and Pastry.
Yes.
With two locations, kind of a breakfast and lunch concept. But Commoner is happy hour and dinner. Chef Kyle Nottingham is the exec over all of those concepts and has worked all around town. He was, I think, at Canyon Ranch in Merivale. And it's interesting to watch his story because he goes from spa chef to Commoner, which is comfort food. I asked him once, I said, what's been the biggest transition moving from spa cuisine to comfort food? He says, I finally get to use butter.
That's true. I have a buddy who used to be F&B up at Merivale.
Okay.
So I used to have lunch with him up at Miraval, which was always cute. And it always was tasty, but I remember we had a piece of, it was like, oh, this is amazing swordfish we're having. I mean, I said, cool. So literally, it's like the 3-ounce portion. And I'm like, can I get the triple? So what a commoner, yeah. your dish you kind of keep
and
going back
to. Just last week, I had it, and I have been craving it ever since. And you're gonna be, your mouth will be agape. You will look at me like I'm nuts. But the New York Strip. And you say, Matt, come on, a steak? I mean, here we are in Tucson, Arizona.
Right.
Let's celebrate the Sonoran spirit with something other than a New York Strip. And I rarely get steaks out because the best steak that I have is the one that I have every Sunday. That's kind of a Russell family tradition. But the New York Strip has sort of been reimagined because it doesn't cut as a come. It's not plated as the whole kind of piece of protein. It's sort of lovingly carved and fanned over a bed of mushroom risotto. But what makes this steak so spectacular, I think, is the way that it just is a manifestation of salt and char and fat, and it all comes together in a mouth-watering bite.
So the seasoning on the and the spice on the outside of this New York Strip is minimal?
Is minimal, correct.
Okay.
But it comes with a little bit of a, almost like a pepper chutney, as I remember. I mean, he was too busy. I couldn't ask him the question. But the sauce that it comes with for dipping, it's not kind of ladled all over the
protein. It's not a chimichurri kind of thing.
It's not a chimichurri. No, and I've had Kyle's chimichurri and it's off the hook. But there's the sauce that they use that they serve alongside in a little ramekin, is just life changing. The New York Strip at Commoner is great.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really good. Go get it. Go get it.
All right, so I'll give you one on the other side.
Yeah.
So we'll like dueling banjos here, but
cool.
We'll do dueling dishes. So at my El Merendero place, 12th and Drexel,
yeah.
He makes a chipotle cream sauce. All right.
Oh man.
And so literally, he's making a bechamel sauce, and he is blending in the right amount of blended chipotle peppers into it.
God bless him.
So it comes out a little, kind of orangey pinky kind of color. Mm-hmm. Right? So Ramon, the owner, is always pushing it a little bit down. He does all the traditional stuff, but he always wants to try to say, what can I do different with what I have? And so he did this as a shrimp dish. So you get the shrimp
right.
Swimming in that. And it's
yeah,
good.
Right.
And I said to him one day, I'm going to take credit for this. I need you to see if you could put this on a chicken enchilada for me.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that chipotle cream sauce on this chicken enchilada, I think it's the best chicken enchilada in the entire town.
Oh, those are big words, Chris.
Those are big.
All right. I'm writing this down.
Yeah.
All right.
So what you want to do, I don't know. So it's on the menu now. It made officially, is there a block called on the menu? It's on the menu now. And I don't know who this Eduardo guy is, but it's called Enchiladas. He doesn't need to name it after me. I'm just saying, but Enchiladas Eduardo.
Well, I'm going to ask for the Enchiladas de Simones and see what they can bring out for me.
On it. No, I'm just kidding.
I love that.
But anyway, get the Chipotle. Sorry, it's the Enchiladas Eduardo, and this sauce is so good. You could eat pebbles in it, and it would still taste good.
Beautiful, beautiful.
It's like that kind of sauce.
All right, so next time you're downtown, we're going back and forth?
Yeah, but we're going to go to break.
8:45
in the morning. Matt Russell, Christy Simone, Ed Alexander. You're on the Wake Up Tucson Show, 10:30 Voice, local news and talk. Amber Smith from the Tucson Chamber and the 9:30 hour. And then I have Ed, we're going to have a disturbing Welcome to the Jungle update that's hitting really close in the 9 o'clock hour.
Go again.
Yes, sir. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice.
This one's for Matt.
Oh, don't do it to me.
I did it.
1984.
Her name was Leanne.
Oh.
She said, 10 months is long enough for us. So I walked out of the band room at Saguaro High School, tail between my legs, and wept in the corner.
So Matt shared Against All Odds,
yeah,
and that was a girl named Donna that I used to date early freshman year of high school, and I found out that she was doing some things behind D. Simone's back kind of thing, and so I had the Asia Alpha in the cassette tape of my Walkman, And John Wetton and Jeff Downs knows how to write a pretty good breakup song. Heat of the moment, only time will tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so this is a deep track off the Asia Alpha album. And I probably played this about 40 times a week for a little bit. So anyway, we're doing quid pro quo, just like Clarice Starling and Dr. Lecter.
Oh,
today.
Yes. Without the fava beans.
The good fava bean.
Yes.
All right, so we're doing dueling banjos on favorite local Tucson dishes.
Yeah.
So move to you, Dr.
Yeah.
Russell.
Another one that will surprise you.
Thank you, sir.
Clarice. And it's no coincidence that we were just talking about Vietnamese cuisine. But the best banh mi that I've had in my life. And I've purchased off of food trucks. I've been to Vietnamese restaurants.
I've been to the mountaintop.
Hub. Downtown.
What?
Hub. I had the same reaction when I saw banh mi. Now Hub, this is the, you know, mac and cheese, great burgers, elevated bar food, you know, that kind of thing. Banh mi changed my whole perspective on the sandwich. And I asked Chef Ben Caballero what his hidden ball trick was with that. He slow braises his pork belly, I think 12 hours or something like that. But it's the secret sauce, literally, is this kind of soy aioli that he uses. So you've got, and he uses it liberally. So it's not just a suggestion of soy. It really is a full creamy experience.
Interesting.
So when you get that texture, you get that crunch from the top of that, from the exterior of that pork belly, sink your teeth into that 12-hour kind of fat that's rendered, and then have that kind of finish with that soy aioli, with the brightness of the cilantro and the carrots. It is the best banh mi I've ever had, and it's at Hub downtown.
So he's doing a pork belly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow, that's interesting. I never would have thought.
It's his imaginative expression of what a banh mi can be.
Because I would have told you my favorite banh mi, of course, is by Vina Baguette.
Yes.
Over there on Oracle.
Yep.
He's really doing it. Old school, correct. So yep. I'm going to have to, I don't go to Hub often, so I'll have to
have the banh
go back for that, because I'm always looking for a great banh mi.
Yeah, there it is.
And a little sriracha on that sucker. Have a nice day.
Yeah, done.
I'm there.
Done.
I'm going to go to a sandwich I can't have very often, because it'll kill you if you eat it too often. How's that for a description? It's at the sausage shop. It's called, this is so unbelievably named. This is so Kent and Barbie. It's called the Tubby. And I asked him one day, why? Because, so they're so close to the police substation there. They get a lot of cops.
Right.
In that area coming to them. And this happened to be, let's see, a slightly portly fellow who kind of came up with it.
Mm.
So that's tubby. Why the Tubby.
There it is.
So let me explain the Tubby to you.
Please.
So imagine an onion roll that has his pulled pork that he makes there.
Like
on it.
Old school onion roll with the strips of the caramelized onions on the top? Okay, got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then, so pulled pork that he does there. Then, of course, Kent makes his own andouille sausage.
Yeah.
So he chops that up. All right, so that and the meat and the pork, the other pork. He's kind of hitting on his little panini thing to get it hot. Grilled peppers and onions.
Mm. Mm.
Pepper jack cheese, Cajun mustard.
Oh my gosh. Firing on all cylinders.
It is, I'm telling you, it's inappropriately named or appropriately named. Just the name of it will keep you from eating too many of it.
Right.
Because if you eat these, you will become slightly portly or more. But
by design, though. But it sounds like this is one of those sandwiches, when people think about flavor expressions, that's uber important, obviously, but I love meals and dishes, and this sounds like one of them, that actually has textural differences.
Right.
So it sounds like you've got all kinds of wonderful textures that are working together, in that one sandwich, just, and blend it all together with that cheese, sounds heavenly. And the beautiful, I can imagine the spice, of that sausage with the kind of the smoke from that, from the pork, man, it sounds good.
Again,
that could be lunch today.
Right.
That could very well be lunch.
So that's the idea.
Darn you, Christy Simone.
So that's the idea, right, is when you take these ingredients that have existed for centuries.
Yes.
And you just put them in the right order and position in the right proportion, magic things happen, right? That's part of the battle of the culinary arts, right? Is what is that next combination of flavor profiles and textures that I'm going to put together and make something magic happen.
Absolutely.
And I think something beautifully called the Tubby is right there.
I'm it. I mean, that's going to be my new sandwich.
What about, what's your next one?
My next one. Okay. When was the last time you were at Feast? Sorry to put you on the spot.
No. I have a Feast story for you on why I don't go.
Okay.
And I love Doug Levy.
Yeah, I think
I want to say it over and over again. Yeah. I love Doug.
I'm right there with you.
Nicest guy ever. He, in his original Feast of what he was pushing there. But he said something to me the last time I was there 2 years ago that made me not go back a little bit.
Uh-oh.
I don't even know
if I want to know.
Sorry. So I used to get, my favorite thing there used to be, he rotated the menu. But he used to make a crispy duck salad that was.
I've had it.
Awesome.
Yep.
Okay. I went there and it was a little bland. Which felt so un-Doug-like.
Unlike Doug. Yeah.
Right. And he said to me, look at my audience.
Oh no.
A lot of old people. And it kind of took my wind out of my sails.
So when he's thinking about his guests, he is using that to inspire the way he kind of changes things up at the back of the house.
Right. And that's, so anyway.
So I don't want to eat at Broadway proper. I want to eat at Feast, for crying out loud.
So, correct. Thank you. So what are you going to do? I love Doug. I can say that. I love Doug Lee. I think he's one of the nicest guys. His mind on cooking is great.
Right.
And I wish him all the success in the world. But when he told me that, I was like,
yeah.
Little Charlie Brown moment.
Yeah.
So what do you got for me?
Okay, so, and the interesting thing about naming a favorite dish at Feast is because it's highly unlikely that that dish is going to be on the menu tonight because he changes his menu hourly.
Yep.
But there, I had never had a borlotti bean before, or a borlotti bean.
Wow.
B-O-R-L-O-T-T-I. And he has a salad there. Matt, one of your favorite go-to dishes in Tucson is a salad? What is happening here?
Sure.
But when you're married to a personal trainer, you don't have any choice, but I digress. do you imagine the pain, by the way, of what it's like to be married to a personal trainer? Of all the careers that she could have chosen?
Well,
pastry chef.
It's perfectly complimentary to you.
I guess so.
The Lord centered your way for a reason.
Indeed. In 28 years together, something is working. So he has a calamari and borlotti bean salad. I think that is one of the most imaginative combinations of flavors. First of all, when you think calamari, you think fried chunks of fish with the legs and all, which I absolutely love. I mean, we could do a whole hour on calamari in town.
Right.
But this is chilled calamari, not breaded at all, so just kind of tender strips of calamari that have been seasoned with a little citrus. But these borlotti beans, Rocco even saw, I posted about that, and Rocco sent me a note. He says, yeah, I love borlotti beans. They're also called cranberry beans or Roman beans. So they got this wonderful kind of nutty flavor to them, and Doug uses them liberally in the salad. So you've got the nuttiness from those beans and that fresh citrus coming off that calamari folded in with the greens, just delicious. I do have to agree with you about Chef Doug Levy. I think he's one of the best chefs in town. I think he has an unusually unique expression of his craft at Feast. It's one of those places that I'm always glad I rediscovered every time I go there.
Right.
But thank you for sharing your one reflection.
Well, some people, I don't know if you know this, sometimes DeSimone's known to overshare. let's do this. We're going to hold that over for one more segment. We're going to do one more thing of dueling dishes. All right. From one power trio to another, as we like to say.
Russell, Alexander, DeSimone.
Are you sure you can handle another segment together?
that makes us rad.
I love it. I told people on my on themenulive.com that you and I typically aren't in the same room at the same time together for national security purposes, of course. So this is definitely going to be an epic hour.
So we're going to do one more discussion with Mr. We're just doing dueling dishes. We felt like we want to do one more segment of that.
Yep, your turn.
And then we'll get into a few other things. Now the sad thing I wanted to tell you about real quick is, so we've been doing this Welcome to the Jungle series for the last so many months of how horrible it is to do business in Tucson when it comes to crime and people breaking into your place, from Dave at Red Desert with people cutting the smoker open and taking whole briskets, which I think is the 11th commandment, thou shalt not steal briskets.
Bastards.
Oh, man. Between broad daylight robberies of Mi Nanito.
Yep.
I don't know if you know that. Bill Clinton ate there. No, I know. Morisco's Chihuahua on right. Swan and Speedway right. was ripped off yep. in broad daylight.
Tito and Pep within hours of their opening.
Oh, that's right.
The window. Yeah. I mean, come on.
That poor bastard at Reforma getting tased two Sunday nights ago.
Oh, man. I did see that. Yeah.
And so the guy came in on Sunday night and tied up the staff and tased the manager to get him the money out of the safe or something like that. Joe's Pancake House.
Yep.
Was just ripped off in broad daylight. Also the Papa Murphy's and something else right in that same, the guy was just needed some drug money,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, it was right in that same strip. Yeah.
So that happened. And then, I just wanted to tell you guys, so remember in the second hour, we had Mark Van Buren from the Marriott and Rocco from Rocco's Little Chicago. And Rocco had to leave a little soon. So what I can tell you now is he got an alert on his phone that his motion detectors went off in his restaurant this morning. So this isn't at 2 in the morning. This is at 7:45 in the morning.
After sunrise.
Correct.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. So he just sent me a picture. So when you first walk in, and he will be open for business. It's not like he's closing. So please actually go out of your way to go to
Rocco
today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Help him pay for this window.
Oh,
but
no.
That whole window on the left.
Oh, no.
Good when you
grief.
Come in, is totally blown out.
Bastards.
And then they try to, and he's got a big spider web on his bottom part of his door.
So do people think that when a place is closed, they have lots of money just hanging around?
If you're out of your mind.
And,
what the hell?
And small, family-owned, mom-and-pop, independent restaurants that sponsor little league teams.
Yes.
That I mean, seriously, that is an assault.
Well, we just had Danny
on what is right about Tucson.
And Danny Sawaya from Tucson Strength
yeah.
opens up in the old Chuck E. Cheese on Speedway and Wilmot.
Yeah.
And in his first 60 days of being open, he has a crackhead go in there, grab a 25-pound plate and threw it through his window.
Disgusting.
All right. So remember, 1988 staffing levels, children, in Tucson, Arizona.
Right, right.
So still waiting. I said, can you mention this on air? He said, sure. And he says, I'm still waiting for TPD. So
as the mayoral and council candidates rotate through your show,
right.
I hope that you will continue to press them on what their plan is to at least get to 1989. Staffing levels at TPD. I mean, it's a national disgrace.
That's a disgrace.
It's a disgrace.
And I know a lot of you yelled at me because I didn't hammer on Rahina when she was here 2 days ago on staffing levels. We're going to have that discussion.
I hope so.
Coming up, children. Yeah. She's on the first week of March again, so for a full hour.
1988 was only a couple of years after the breakup song in the band room in high school that we talked about. I mean, that's a long time ago.
So think about it. You just said 1987. Oh, we're talking about 1987 with Rocco
right.
on the Broadway widening.
Right, right.
There's something about the final days of Ronald Reagan that was very special to this community, right? Did we lose IBM in that same time frame?
Yeah, had to have.
So IBM blows out. We're still at 1988 staffing levels, and the Broadway widening discussion started in 87.
Right.
It's a special time.
Ouch.
Special, special time. All right, let's get to, real quick, let's do one more each of, is it my turn or your turn?
It's your turn. I talked about my bond name.
Yeah. So let's
do pressure.
We can do this for 4 hours.
Of course we could.
Not that we want to do that to you. But I want to stay on salads.
Yeah.
And right. I'm going to give you an unexpected salad place. Frankie's Cheesesteaks.
Wow.
So get the cheesesteak salad. You can get it with the steak or the chicken. All right? And so you get all the traditional toppings of, I get grilled onions, broccoli rabe.
Yes.
Okay, and then the mix of the sweet and red and the sweet and hot peppers with either the steak or the chicken. It's both are good on top.
A man.
And then they don't do cheese sauce or provolone, which is fine. You want to say, so they do a little shaved Parmesan on top.
It sounds glorious.
And then just get their homemade balsamic vinegar.
Yes, right.
It's one of the best salads. You would never know you could get it at Frankie's Cheesesteak.
And after one of my great American heroes, Frank Santos, after he sold Frankie's, I'm delighted that the customer still has that Frankie's experience.
Right.
Because they have kept what works about Frankie's. So when you have this salad, you have everything in the middle of the bun that you love.
Right.
So you're going without the Amoroso roll.
Correct.
Which is a risky move. Right. I understand. but you're all about living life on the edge, Christy Simone.
That's me.
All right. I'm duly noted. I think that's great.
That's a good one. What do you got for me?
All right. So last one.
Yeah, I'll let you go, and then I'll go one more after.
Okay,
you.
That sounds great. My next one, and again, you probably have to wait for a Wednesday on rotation because the lovely Chef Maria Maison over at Boca Tacos down on 4th Avenue, every Wednesday, she calls it Exotic Taco Wednesday.
Sure.
And
she got in a little hot water because of the lions.
National news about the African lion taco. Death threats and all that kind of stuff. But in her rotation of exotic animals into which, on top of tortillas, is kangaroo. Now, stay with me. The kangaroo taco at Boca, when kangaroo makes its way onto a Wednesday menu, is unbelievable. And,
really?
And I remember the first time I had it, I said, what is this? Because it kind of has the sort of the appearance and the texture of ground beef. So you would look at this and say it's a ground beef taco. But the kangaroo has a little bit of game to it. So there's a little gaminess to it, which makes it interesting and fascinating. Of course, then you think about down under and what that really means and, you know, bringing these flavors to the United States is great. And I said, okay, well, you're all about tequila as well. So when you're eating kangaroo,
right,
what kind of tequila do you go to? And I'm expecting her to start connecting the dots and coming up with something, you know, cool. Right away, without hesitation, she said, I love the Peñasco Añejo, because that wonderful, rich, rested kind of caramel vanilla in that oaky Añejo tequila is a great match to that subtle gaminess of the kangaroo. So when you go to Boca on an Exotic Taco Wednesday, look for kangaroo. Get it with the Peñasco Añejo, and I promise you it'll be a taco the likes of which you've never had before.
So let me go old school for my last one of the day between us, and this is can't go more old school than this, and it's like my broken moment, record moment of when I go to this place, even though they have 47 other items on the menu.
Right.
It's Carlotta's Carne Seca.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you saved the best for last.
At El Charro.
You saved the best for last.
And I'm just telling you, I like a lot of things on their menu, but the idea there, how many places still go old school on their carne seca of actually hanging it in the sun?
Literally.
Right?
Yeah, just baking in the heat of the Sonoran sun. I think that is one of the coolest food stories in the world. And the fact that all the carne secas, the carne seca that goes to all the charro concepts, all began their journey in that steel cage.
The animal
hoisted steel to the top of the flagpole, is just something that is newsworthy. So you say the best for last. And in full disclosure, I should say, I love the Flores family. I have been a long time a fan of Gary Hickey and that whole crowd there, and both of my kids. Both my son and my daughter are both servers at the new Charro Del Rey downtown. Sustainable seafood done right here in the Sonoran Desert. So whenever you're at Charro Del Rey, look for my two mini-me's. They're unmistakable.
Eyeball too.
Oh, oh my gosh. Rare. Mark?
Thankfully, both my kids have a full head of hair.
Matt Russell is totally red right now after that laugh. That's amazing. One of my favorite little gifts I ever got from Carlota Flores literally was, we were doing a happy hour there one day, and I went over to the kitchen to say goodbye to her, and she goes, come here. She gives me this little gift. Thanks for doing what you do, right? And it was six carne seca burritos with some fresh key lime, and literally just crack that open, squeeze a little lime on the carne seca, have that with a beer. Good living, children.
She really does love you.
She does love me, and I love her.
You know, I mean, quickly talking about my days as a lobbyist, I used to represent Dr. Andrew Weil.
Okay.
Did his national PR and public affairs for years. Yeah. And we did a reception, for Dr. Weil on Capitol Hill, and he testified before a Senate Appropriations Committee trying to raise some money for integrative medicine research. So we did a big reception on Capitol Hill with all the Arizona congressional delegation and all of the key members of committees, on the healthcare committees, and we literally shipped case of carne seca from Tucson, Arizona to the United States Capitol to make sure that Congress got to appreciate what Tucson tastes like. And indeed, it was a home run.
Amen, Brother Russell. Check this guy out at On the Menu, onthemenulive.com.
That's it.
And then you're going to be on Bill's show later?
I'm going to be on Bill's show at 12:50 today, revealing my three picks for weekend food, fun, and frolic.
All right. Tune into the Buckmaster Show, 12 to 1 o'clock on here on 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Thank you, brother.
Cheers, man.